listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled broadcast to bring you a terrifying auditory experience unlike anything you've ever heard. Big Papa Pete, Long Shot Ken, The Monkey Boy, and Den are proud to present The Loud Idiot Spooktoberfest.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is a lovely evening. I'm excited. I'm Big Papa Pete.
I am Long Shot Ken.
I'm Dan.
We are in the heart of Geektoberfest. We're two weeks in. This is my favorite time of year, just like I'm sure it is for all you guys.
Too. 2 weeks into Geektoberfest?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's absolutely your favorite.
It's just right now. Just the second week.
1 week in? Screw it.
No. Second week.
It's a terrible week.
Yeah. Now, coming off a great show last week, we had a lot of good things. Cool feedback already from the Renegades episode, the Star Trek Renegades episode.
I have no idea. Oh, okay, good. You do remember.
Yeah, I hope so.
It's like you have no idea what we did, do we?
No, I hope so. I recorded some great interviews. I hope I remember. And a lot of people, because of it, actually have gone out and watched the movie now. It's still mixed about how they feel about it, but I think a lot like tonight, I think some of the discussion of what we're doing tonight is going to be mixed and debated as well. We have some special guests with us. Dorothy Dubkowski is back with us. She came in a couple weeks ago.
Hello.
When I told her what tonight's show is going to be about, she kind of got a little excited and wanted to come back and participate.
Jumped at the chance. Came running over.
And returning for a long hiatus is Attica Wilde. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited to be back.
And we told you too about what we were doing, and I'm curious because there's a particular musical we'll be talking about tonight, and I know that there's going to be a lot of debate. I kind of asked both of you to not give me your feelings of it yet, so mm-hmm. We'll get into that later on in the show. Attica, it's been a while.
Yes.
How's everything been? You've been very busy.
Yes. Oh my God. How long has it been?
About a year.
Has it really?
Actually, it might have been over a year at this
point.
Over
a year.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I remember the last time I saw you was when I ran into you at the zombie walk.
Yes.
Last year.
Yes. Oh, my God. It has been forever.
Yeah. tell us what's been going on. You have smoke and mirrors.
Yes.
Last time we talked, you had your school starting up.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I'm like, wow, that's far back. You're right. It is far back. I have Smoke and Mirrors Peep Show. That's my burlesque company, and it's doing pretty well. I'm excited about it still, like year number two now, I think. And we started the Garden State Burlesque Academy, where we teach people how to do burlesque and take their clothes off and all that good stuff. It's a lot of fun.
And perform.
Well, that too, yeah.
It is art. It is art.
I know. I always joke that I'm a theatrical stripper. That's the easiest way to... I actually went out to dinner with my family the other night, and that's exactly my aunt's like, so what do you do exactly? And I was like, well... And after three glasses of wine, I was like, well, I'm pretty much a fancy stripper. And my mother choked on her wine. And she's come to see me, actually. My mother finally came and saw one of my shows, and she was like in tears. She was so proud. And I was like, that's really cute. My mom is proud of me.
Do you get more nervous knowing that your mom's
Oh, my God. I was a mess. It was one of the biggest shows I've produced. It was actually, I was producing the New Jersey Burlesque Festival. However, that kind of got waysided because Asbury Park was kind of being a pain about certain permits and things. So we had to find another venue and then just scrapped it all together for a while. And so I put together a showcase with all the people that were going to be in it. And I was like, Mom, now's the time to come because, you know, you're going to see the best of the best. You're going to see all the good people and I'll do something really pretty. And so she came and so did my aunt and uncle. And I was about to die. I was so nervous for her to see this. I was hyperventilating before I went on. I'm never that nervous, but
sigh of relief after you talk to her afterwards.
Yeah, I could see her from like where I was because I didn't do my act on stage. There was a second stage at Roxy and Duke's in Dunellen, and I had this giant glittery gold birdcage, and I did my act in that, and I could see her because there weren't spotlights exactly, so I could see her face the whole time. And she's just smiling from ear to ear. And I was like, thank God. If she looked like she was scandalized, I don't know what I would have done.
I don't know. I've seen some of those crowds at those shows. So how did she do fitting in?
She did good. It was a really good crowd, actually. It was a very classy crowd. It was a good show for my mom to come to. And I said to her later, I'm like, yeah. So she's like, I'll come to all your shows. I'm like, no, no. I'll tell you which shows are appropriate for you to come to. Okay.
Not during Fleet Week.
Oh, wait, those ones where I'm getting covered in glittery blood. No, I don't think you should come to that
Speaking
one.
Speaking of that.
What's wrong with that?
Speaking of that, we are in the heart of Geektoberfest. It is October. It's our favorite time of year. Halloween is coming. Part of our topic of conversation is going to be looking at Phantom of the Opera. We're going to actually pinpoint just Phantom of the Opera tonight. I am curious because I have seen your act. I've seen you mm-hmm. eviscerate a stuffed teddy bear with glittery blood coming out of it. I've yes. seen you perform an homage to Carrie on stage.
Mm-hmm.
What is it for you? I mean, going on stage and drawing from all these horror elements.
So it's not my specialty exactly, but during October, that's when it happens.
And
but
it gets creative. It's
mostly it's the glitter blood. That's I can't even lie. It's literally I'm going to be covered in glitter and blood, and that's the draw for me.
And you're going to travel and take it home with you. We've heard that story in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my roommate told you that one.
So required viewing during this time of year, Attica.
For me?
Yeah.
All of the Nightmare on Elm Street, except for the second one. I hate that one. Don't judge me. Don't judge me. I really hate it. It's terrible. I can't. I think I've watched it like all together twice, and only one of them was sober. I had to get drunk the second time, and I still hated it.
I have a great documentary that I have to pass off to you. Called,
which one?
Never Sleep Again.
Of course, I've seen it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Our friend Mike Perez produced it.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
Yeah. And just watching that cast from Nightmare 2 talk about it
mm-hmm.
makes me appreciate that movie more, actually, because I hated it when I was younger, too. It was out there, and it, you know, they tried changing the mythos and taking it in a direction that didn't work. But going back and listening to these people explain that they kind of were a part of this and saw that and undertones of what was in that movie.
Oh, you're I know.
So ashamed.
So
Clue Gallagher is just
no.
one mm-hmm. of my heroes, and just hearing him going like, yeah, I had no idea any of that was happening. But awesome. Dorothy, is there anything in particular that you like to watch during Halloween?
That's a good question, because horror films freak me out. But I do like, I mean, like a good story, like a Sleepy Hollow, or like, I'm trying to think, just anything that's really, I'm more of like a thriller sort of Clue type of person, more than like a
Hey, there's nothing wrong with watching Clue during
no.
Halloween.
Clue is a good one.
All right. Okay.
It's an excellent one.
It is
Murder by Death, if you like
that's
Clue.
That's another great one. Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
I've heard of that.
Peter Sellers.
Oh, you can't kick her off.
Yep.
Just a delicious send up of all the stereotypical detectives.
Yeah.
From that.
All right, good. I was having a little gore envy over here. I was like, oh, my glitter blood. Well, glitter blood, glitter on anything is fine. So
okay, yeah. Totally.
If it's on blood, it makes
no,
it
no,
okay
no,
for
it's
me.
It's not all about gore. Not, no, no.
I mean, there's also Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's Nightmare Before Christmas. Obviously, that's a classic.
Yep.
I'm going to be, I'm. You know, I'm finally going to voice this opinion.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
I have a problem with Nightmare Before Christmas.
Why is that?
It's out, folks.
Don't get me wrong.
You can't
it's
take it
great.
Back.
I love
no,
it.
No, it's been said.
It's fabulous, but it's too Christmas for Halloween,
mm-hmm.
and it's too Halloween for Christmas, so I never know when to watch it.
Both
and
on
I'm
Thanksgiving.
Too busy, I'm too busy getting ready for Thanksgiving dinner.
I'll say November could work.
I
think Dorothy's
that was
a good
the
point.
First thing that
I mean, you
came
have the
mind.
Whole weekend after the parade's over.
Well,
what are you doing?
It's the nightmare before Christmas, so I guess
you know
before.
What I'm doing? I'm decorating for Christmas, is what
are
I'm
you?
Doing.
Okay.
As soon as Santa Claus comes down.
But are you decorating the skeletons?
Huh?
No.
Okay.
I do. Year round. Yeah, absolutely.
All the skeletons Den has.
The skeletons have to come down for Christmas. Yeah. I'm very particular about this. Rest of the year, they're fine. Don't get me wrong. They're there, but they at least get a Santa hat.
Yeah, exactly. Santa hat okay. and maybe some lights and stuff. Yeah. Make them really glittery and whatever.
Festive.
There you go.
Again, with the glitter.
Oh, there's glitter everywhere.
Glitter on it.
All over everything. My cat
heals all ills, honestly.
Well,
my cat is covered in glitter right now. My mom is like, why does the... It doesn't matter. There's glitter everywhere.
It's called craft
everywhere.
Herpes.
Everywhere. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly. You're right. So I can't get it out anywhere.
You've got a choice. Go mad or embrace it.
Pretty much. Yeah. I'm like, oh, the cat's glittery. Oh, well. Sorry, Joker.
I tend to go the other way.
Oh, no, my cat's gay. It's when all right.
Don't judge.
Oh, I see what I did there.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you did.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to shut up now.
I'm just more concerned about how much work we're going to, and effort we got to put into cleaning the table where Attica's sitting after we're done tonight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, the chair?
All, with all the glitter. I just want to make sure that we... Yeah.
For those of you...
There's probably already glitter here from the last time I was here still.
Oh, yeah.
It clogged the vacuum.
For those of you who are just listening on the radio and don't have a visual, it's like Pigpen, but sparkly.
Yeah.
Pigpen from Charlie Brown.
You said that last time I was here, too.
Wow. Yeah. I need new material. I really do.
Or it's just so accurate.
What about you, Dan? What are you watching this year?
Blade.
Oh.
It's a running joke since day one.
Why'd I even bother to ask? Dan has a huge affinity for vampires, and he loves action movies, so when this movie came around, this became like his go-to for everything.
It was the first comic book movie hit. Mm-hmm. It was before X-Men.
Well, it was the first one that had a draw.
You know, we're right. Straight up going to ignore Batman 89, Batman 63... Batman 67.
Superman in 78, you know.
Well, nobody even saw that. I mean, who's Richard Donner?
Yeah. He only directed Lethal Weapon and a whole bunch of other great movies.
Ah, you smile.
That horse riding guy, right?
Anyway, that horse riding guy, yes.
The old classics of Omen and got on a prophecy bend, at least the first couple of original ones.
The first one was fantastic. It's one of course. It's Christopher Walken at his best.
Oh, yeah. Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I prefer him as Casey Jones
and
myself.
And Viggo as the best Satan I've ever seen.
I went back and started watching Dracula 2000 recently.
I kind of love that movie.
I like that.
I really do.
When I point out to people that that's Gerard Butler, they're like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a thing.
It got so panned when it came out, and I remember going to see it in the theaters, and I loved it, and I thought the concept was cool.
Me
the
too.
The fact that... You know, Dracula is Judas Iscariot.
I don't normally admit it out loud, though, that I like it. I can't believe you're admitting it out loud.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I went back and watched it again, and I'm like...
I know, but they can't see my face. It's okay.
I went back and watched it again. I'm like, no, this is still good.
It is still good. You know? But you know what? I have an excuse. I'm a girl, and Gerard Butler is absolutely stunning. So you're just like,
oh good.
God.
He'll be coming back up in conversation later, too.
Yeah, I know.
Christopher Plummer is the one that drew me to it in another vampire movie. Okay, and then Johnny Lee Miller had me get interested.
I do love
because
him, too.
I like
that
a
had
lot
been
of
one of his
work.
first roles, too.
Yeah, of course,
but
7 of 9
Hackers was his
as
first,
a reporter.
Right?
Yeah, well, I never saw Hackers, to be honest. I never got around to it.
We'll have to watch it.
I just bought it
it's
recently.
Like the shock heard around the world.
Hold on, what was that?
I still haven't seen Hackers
I don't
yet.
Remember
I
you being
it.
In a coma in the 90s.
Angelina Jolie and Johnny Lee Miller, really?
Yeah.
You haven't?
Did they?
And Matthew Lillard, who is also one of my biggest
that
crushes.
Might have been why. That might have been why I didn't say it.
Matthew Lillard? He hadn't even done anything to tick you off
if it's
yet.
Not Scream 1, then...
What? Okay, we're going on a tangent here. I'm like, SLC Punk, are you kidding?
That was a good movie. But acquired taste, though. I had to watch
it
more
is.
Than once.
That man can do no wrong for me. It's all right. Him and Seth Green.
Even a Shaggy?
Even a Shaggy. It's the only reason I watched the movie, all right?
The other thing is I went in, I started watching the Psycho films again. Because the first one's classic. It's Hitchcock at one of his best. But, the sequels get a bad rep, I think. I went back. Tom Holland did a fantastic job in Psycho 2. What?
Defend this one.
All right. First of all, beforehand, how many people at this table have seen Psycho 2?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to be a short conversation then. It opens up 22 years after the original.
Right.
Norman Bates is being released from the mental institute where they incarcerate him at the end of the first film.
Oh, spoiler.
Hey.
Wait, who doesn't know that?
Huh?
He comes back
home. I refuse to watch the movie because I played the video game for PC and it was horrible. So.
There was a video game?
For like IBM PC. We're talking like original Oregon Trail era. I have never seen anybody write about it.
Mother is coming for you. What do you do? Grab knife.
No.
There is no knife.
Yes.
You play that basically, yes. But
see, you got it.
You're a detective investigating the house.
The house.
The motel doesn't enter into it at all.
You're just in the house.
It's like a splash screen at the beginning, yeah. And you walk into the house. And it's... I've never seen anybody write about it. But it amazes me, because for everything they write about E.T. for the Atari, and how unplayable it was, and how you actually couldn't beat it, same thing goes for Psycho. You couldn't get into the first level.
Nice.
It was that bad.
It took Superman 2 weeks to get the door open.
You forgot to look under the rock for the key to get in.
And I don't understand, from what I know of the movies, I don't understand how the ghosts come into play. But there are ghosts. There are ghosts in the Psycho video game.
So anyway, 22 years later, Norman comes back home. He's getting notes throughout the house and at his work from what seems to be his mother. And he thinks he's slipping back into madness. And the beautiful and brilliant part of this film was the fact that they studied the original film, saw all the beats that worked, and the ultimate twist was that Norman Bates was not the bad guy in the movie. He wasn't committing any of the crimes. It was the sister of Janet Leigh's character from the original that was trying to play mind games with him to try to make him go crazy so that they could... call the police and have him reincarcerated, and it backfires in the best way. Meg Tilly, top of her game in that movie.
Yeah.
She was fantastic as a love interest, and she's got a great arc and character development in that entire film. I recommend it to anybody. I think it's a fantastic masterpiece, to be honest. Uh-oh, he's thinking.
Is that the thinking face or the judging face?
You told me to defend it.
No, you defended it well. Okay.
Well, that was fun, everyone.
Yeah, Psycho 3?
No, you
Psycho
did it better.
Psycho 3 was okay. The cool part was Anthony Perkins actually directed it.
As long as you don't hold on to the original one too tight. I like the pacing of it.
Yeah, it was very
good. It was incredibly good on the pacing. Meg Tilly was overboard, in my opinion.
I don't think so. But yeah,
3. I like the swerve.
3 was interesting. One of Jeff Fahey's first films.
Yes.
Seeing him being a horrible, horrible person. Directing was lacking. It was Anthony Hopkins' first time, so like he tried the best he could. I give him credit. It wasn't the greatest film, but it's still enjoyable to watch and keeps the mythos going. And then the fourth one, Mick Garris, who's known for adapting all the Stephen King movies, a lot of the TV films, went and directed Psycho 4 the beginning, where we get to see a young Norman Bates pre this whole new Bates Motel show, which is the seed for where the show came from. Not C. Thomas Howell. Who was the kid who played Elliot in E.T.? Henry Thomas.
Thank you.
Plays young Norman Bates. And Olivia Hussey as his mother is fantastic. And we get to see the whole genesis of how much of a horrible, mentally disturbed woman she was that just mentally tortured her own boy into becoming the man that he becomes in the other movie. Great, great run. I recommend anybody, if you haven't seen him, check him out.
Okay.
Good stuff.
I like Psycho 8.
Norman Takes Manhattan. Yeah.
What about Norman in Space?
Oh, that was even better.
Oh, that's Psycho X.
Okay. Yes,
the virtual reality segments were awesome.
Awesome. They were in 3D.
Wasn't that in 3D? Oh, yeah. IMAX? What? She saw too.
There you go.
Yeah, it was great.
The outtakes are hilarious.
I like Kramer versus Psycho. That was the ultimate sequel. Nobody even asked
too
me
much
about
arguing.
My movies, though.
Too much arguing. So, all right. So, yeah, one of the big things for tonight, a celebration of family opera.
Yep.
I kind of set up our guests just for that particular reason. Both of you are performers on stage in different capacities. Mm-hmm. I also like the fact that we can have a female perspective of things. That's always fun to have on the show.
Yes.
And I have a feeling that a lot of this will be focused on the musicals because of your guys' background. I'm sure we can all kind of tell stories of our first time seeing the musical. Mm-hmm. But the story started off as a book by Gaston Leroux, which was, has anybody read the book?
Yes, I have.
Interesting storytelling, interesting framework.
It's been a while, but I read it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of it is kind of told through newspaper articles and journals.
I believe so.
And personal accounts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like Dracula.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, actually. Mm-hmm.
And there is someone under the Paris Opera House who is helping to commit murders for a young ingenue that he wants to see in place because he's got this weird affinity for her.
Mm-hmm.
and there's not a lot redeeming about him in the book.
No, and I believe his origin story is a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, it's been since high school that I read it. Yeah. But yeah, I believe the origin story is completely different.
Right.
Yeah, they go very sparingly into detail on the origin in the musical.
Right. It's all very romanticized.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, even that, it's contradicted by the book.
Right. And the book is more of like a horror story as opposed to a tragic love story, as I think we see.
That's one of my biggest things, because people either aren't aware or don't recall that when people love the musical, they think it's a great love story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you go back to the text, you got to remember, Christine is like between 14 and 16 years old.
Yep.
And this is an old, deformed, creepy man that is pinning his own lust onto this young girl that he's way over father age for.
He is not Gerard Butler.
There is. It is very, very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I still can't get over that. I mean, I can understand. I mean, it's the musical is over. What's the word? It caters for the romance and to get the audience more involved. But I mean, I love telling people the original concept and like, nah.
Yeah. I always recommend people read the book. I'm like, read the book. It's like reading Les Mis and seeing the musical. They're different. I mean,
I'm sorry, I can only get through the first 800 pages of that book.
I actually did not finish the book either. I have to admit that. But I did start reading it and I was like, oh God. Everyone dies. Spoiler.
It's like reading a George R. R. Martin story.
Except you don't love the characters as much.
No. Oh my God, Marius is a terrible person. I'm pretty sure I remember properly. There's nothing redeeming about him.
So many incarnations of the film came from this. The first being the 1920s silent version with Lon Chaney. Classic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What, Pete?
No, it's classic.
He just sighed. He's like,
he didn't sigh.
I'm trying to read what that sigh meant.
It's like, I actually, in prepping for the show, I went back and watched it last night.
Okay.
Or tried to watch it.
See, I don't have a problem with the original, but...
You know, it's... I think my problem is I have seen too much.
Okay. What Wait, too much?
I've seen too many other takes on it. I've seen too much other... horror films. I look at that movie and I appreciate what it did setting up the genre of film horror. That these were things that no one had seen.
Mm-hmm. One of the first known or accepted American horror movies.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things that influenced it was F.W. Murnau with Nosferatu and the Cabinet of Dr. Mm-hmm. Caligari, where horror was a very stylized thing. And you get a lot of that in the original Phantom of the Opera, so much that artists recreated the original Paris Opera House as a set that still stands to this day. Like, it's still on the lot, and it's covered in sheets, and it's amazing that they've kept it, because... with the exception of, like, how many movies, I mean, would you actually use that set piece for? You know?
Loving the Time of the Paris Opera House. Ernest Goes to the Paris Opera House. One
Kramer
of the best Ernest
Kramer
movies.
At the Paris Opera House. Versus Psycho at the Paris Opera House.
Yes, it's a Kramer versus Kramer running gag. What have I done?
Later on, we get to the classic Universal monster movies. Claude Rains, who a lot of people still remember as the Invisible Man, which is still one of my personal favorites.
Yes.
More tragic story, very, for me, a little slow-pacing movie. They went more for the drama aspect and trying to incorporate more music acts in it that I think the pacing was kind of off. But
which
still,
one are you talking about there?
The Claude Rains.
The Invisible Man?
Yeah.
Oh. No, the Claude Rains Phantom.
Yes.
Wow. I actually haven't seen that one. But if the pacing was any slower than the silent film.
I thought so, actually.
Oh, wow.
anybody else actually see the original, the Claude Rains
Universal? I've seen them. That's why it was hard for me to, when it became a musical, I'm like, really?
Yeah. You know, this guy got acid thrown in his
At
face.
At this point,
this
I've
version.
Seen a couple of them. I mean, I put them in the same category with Vincent Price and Dr. Fibes at that point.
Oh, I love that movie.
You know?
I love that movie.
Yeah.
But, in this version, we actually got a Harvey Dent Two-Face origin for the Phantom, where someone's stealing his music.
And he had acid dropped on his face. I saw that one. Right. I didn't know who that was, but I mean, I was a little kid, and I happened upon it. And so I have this like vague memory of it, and no recollection of like who those people are. But I thought it was great.
I believe the first Universal, actually up until that, actually the only classic Universal monster movie shot in color.
Mm.
So they wanted to get the stage and the costumes and the sets. They wanted to be able to spotlight all that.
It was all that weird gimmicky movie gimmick stuff. Mm-hmm. Like color.
Yeah. It's a fad. It'll go away. But
now smell-o-vision, that's forever.
Exactly.
Feel around.
Yes. little creepy, but yes.
From there we go into the late 50s, early 60s. Hammer did a version with Herbert Lom.
Because Hammer was contractually obligated to do a version of everything.
Everything, exactly. Everything. Herbert Lom, for those who don't remember, anybody recall the original Peter Sellers Pink Panther movies?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Of I've been on a tear the past week, actually.
Chief Inspector Dreyfus.
Yes.
Was the Phantom of the Opera.
Really?
Sure was.
I have not seen that. I feel like I need to look that one up now.
Yep.
Very similar in style to Universal's Claude Rains movie. Origin, very similar, but a much better film, in my opinion. If you haven't checked it out, I recommend it. Interesting, they gave him like a full face mask, and so it was harder for him to emote, but I mean, the guy did such a great job, you know, working through it.
Oh, God. No, I'm just picturing Spider-Man. And now I can't remember his name.
Which
Green
Spider-Man?
Goblin, the first one.
Oh, yes. Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe emoting through that mask. The full face mask.
When his face was
just tilting his head back and forth.
When his face was just so much creepier that they didn't need the mask.
No, didn't.
All he had to do was smile, and you're like, dude, you're evil.
I never should have put that mask on.
No.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Keep derailing us.
From there, actually, in the late 80s, there was a two-part miniseries on NBC with Charles Dance that people would know from Game of Thrones. He was King Lannister.
Yeah.
And interesting take, more like one of the other musical adaptations. They actually took, there were multiple musical adaptations that came out around the same time besides Andrew Lloyd Webber's. And they wound up taking the story without using the musical elements and turning it into a movie. Not bad. Again, two-part movie, a little slow at times, but worth checking out if you're a Charles Dance fan, because I am. And then one of the last ones I recall was the late 80s where Robert Englund.
I was hoping you were going to mention that one.
Freddy Krueger himself. Played, which I can't see as being a stretch the way the makeup looked on the guy.
No.
So you've seen this movie?
It's been a really long time, and I can't remember anything from it, so that tells you how memorable it was for me, which kills me, because I will watch anything Robert Englund is in.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
Including strippers versus zombies or werewolves
Jenna
or whatever
Jameson,
that was.
Yeah,
I watched that one.
Zombies versus strippers.
Yeah, that one. I watched that one solely because he was in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else see this one? Dan, did you ever catch it?
Nope.
Pete? I'm upset. It's one of the few versions of Phantom that I haven't been able to find.
I have it. I own it.
I wish I knew
so, and I would have brought it.
We have to see this.
We'll make a plan, and then I'll watch that other movie we were talking about earlier too.
There you go.
I'll make him watch Hackers. There we go.
Yes.
This movie is such a mess. It really is. It doesn't know what it wants to be. Mm-hmm. We have this young girl who is getting her first opening night performance as a lead in a musical in New York.
I was going to say, it's modern day,
it's
right?
Modern day, yeah. And I thought it came off more as a stalker
and
movie.
What happened was...
Just really right what it should be.
Right before the performance, a set piece falls and hits her. And for some reason, this barrier is broken and she's magically teleported into the 1700s, 1800s.
Wait, maybe I didn't actually watch this
Opera
movie.
House.
Oh. No, it erases parts of your memory. Stay with
I'm
it.
I'm like, I don't
brain
remember
cells died,
this.
And now you can't
do I
remember.
Own it and just never watched it?
The only reason Ken knows this is he was taking notes while he was watching it.
Okay.
No, I've just seen it way too many times. Is what the problem is. Because I always like to go back to bad movies and just hope that there was something redeeming that I missed the first time. And I'm always fooled every time I watch this movie.
No, that's happened to me once. I went to see...
Hackers, right?
Oh, too soon?
I'm sorry.
It was a little too soon. It was actually, I'm embarrassed to admit this now, because it's one of my favorite movies, House of a Thousand Corpses.
I love that movie.
The first time I saw it, I was in high school, and I was on a date, and I went and I saw the movie, and I was like, that's it? It's literally was my response. I was like, this is it? I don't understand. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my God, that was my reaction to Pulp Fiction.
But for me, it was so built up. Like, I've loved Rob Zombie forever, and it was so built up as this great movie, and he was a genius, and I'm like, I must have missed something. And so I went back and watched it again, and I loved it then, but apparently as a teenager, I was an idiot, so.
That had a weird effect on me, because the first time I saw it in theaters, and I had that feeling like I was watching the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the first time, and I had that feeling relived for the first time since watching that Texas Chainsaw for the first time. It was like, I never thought I could rekindle a feeling like that, because it was just so weird and out there, and to me, kind of original.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think freaked me out. Everything afterwards is just kind of be like, all right, I get what he does now. That's why I'm sure I wasn't a fan of the Halloween movies, but
I enjoyed the first one. I liked the first one, and I didn't need an hour
of Michael Myers as a kid.
That kid was creepy.
Yeah, I didn't need it. It's scarier not knowing why he was like that. Personally.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, but yeah, I'm digressing. So she gets sent back into the past somehow. The Phantom wants to build her up to be this star. He's in love with her, but the thing is, he is disfigured. But instead of wearing a mask, he is a homicidal murderer that uses the skin of his victims to patch a mask together that he sews on his face.
Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
Just take all the movies and make it that.
Yep.
Yeah. And he sews it together so it looks like Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
It did.
It ends with her ultimately trying to defeat him. And when she does, she comes back to present day, discombobulated, trying to get to her play. And at the very end, there's a guy playing a violin on the street. And you realize that it's him. And it's just, there was no reason for any of this.
Or Fiddler on the Roof. What?
It was Ted.
If I were a rich man.
No, but it was Topol.
Weird.
In the 90s, Dario Argento, who is a master of horror, gave us a version with Julian Sands and his daughter Aja. And
really?
Stay away.
I was like, that sounds promising.
No. Wait, why haven't I heard of it?
It's essentially Phantom of the Opera meets Willard. He lives in the sewers.
Oh.
And he's like a Pied Piper with the rats in the sewers.
It's Willard? Whereas Willard was just a cheap ripoff of Phantom.
Yeah, so Stay Away, not one of my personal favorites. Very artistic. I mean, he's got a great style and vision and everything, but it's not a good movie.
So it was visually beautiful and the rest of it was just eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Even his daughter couldn't save that movie.
Well, that's too bad.
Which brings us to the last one after that, which was, God, are we allowed to say his name on the show? Joel Schumacher's interpretation. The man who killed the Batman franchise in the 90s.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Interpretation of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera. I'm going to take a step away from this movie.
You know what? I'll give it this, and I'll give Schumacher this. He resisted the temptation to put nipples on the costume.
I was waiting.
Okay.
For those who don't know about Batman in the 90s.
There were nipples on the costume.
Nipples on the Batman costume.
Because that was necessary.
He insisted.
He's a little flamboyant. And we'll leave that at that. No, we'll go back to this.
I don't know that has anything to do with anything.
He just has
bad taste.
Because I think the conversation we need to have before this movie is talking about Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask everybody, when was the first time you actually saw it on stage?
The musical.
Yes.
I was in I probably middle school, I assume. I've seen it literally 18 times.
Me too.
So, wow. Yeah, anytime I had a birthday, someone would take me because I loved it that much. So I've seen it a lot. But I was very young when I first saw it and just in love with it visually. I think I didn't even understand the story the first time I saw it because I was that young. I just thought it was really beautiful.
Yeah, that's cool. I was 23, Someone took me for my birthday. They knew, like...
So it was like last year.
So like a year ago.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Someone, a friend of mine knew like the neighbor of a guy that was in it. And so we went, we got a backstage tour and it was like very exciting. We saw the fold out staircase and all the wigs and all that craziness.
I'm really jealous right now.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. And I was like, I had kind of a weird, like out of body experience with it. Cause I was like a big Les Mis fan. I was like, Les Mis is all about Broadway.
And there's a lot of Clifton High people that were totally like, either you were a Phantom fan or you were a Les Mis fan.
Or you were
Les
Mis, like two groups.
It was the Sharks and the Jets.
It is.
Except
it is.
We don't talk about West Side Story.
We did a lot of snapping our fingers. We did. but yeah, so I liked it. I thought I was totally taken away by it, but I didn't like the Phantom. I was like, he's not redeeming at all. I don't want him to survive. I want him to go away. And I didn't like it all. And it made me feel so bad. Cause I was like, I think I was supposed to like him. but it was, I think he just played it. The guy who played it was just exceptionally creepy. And I took that end of the story and took it to a whole new level. And I sort of rewatched a few scenes, like I YouTubed it before this interview, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe I was like a very idealistic like 23-year-old and I had these like beautiful ideas of romance and love, and it didn't hit any of them.
I don't know why, I just had a mental picture when Dorothy went to see this and the Phantom was like being played by Jack Palance.
Sing once again with me. How strange duet.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was weird. Anyway, so...
Now, you don't know Love Never Dies, the sequel, right?
I do know. Okay.
Oh, yeah, because we did mention that.
Yes.
Yeah, you won't like that. You thought the Phantom was too creepy.
You didn't watch it?
No, I did watch it.
Okay, oh, so she did watch it.
Yeah, yeah,
right. So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Uh-huh. Good.
But
I'm forgetting who's everything.
Yeah, anyway. That was my impression.
Except for the gentleman who played the Phantom, what did you think of the rest of the cast?
It was just, you know, I was so overwhelmed by it. There was so much going on, and I just thought it was really kind of breathtaking and amazing, and I was just stunned by everything. But I was a little, it was a lot of effects. I wasn't like a big effect person at the time, so I really just wanted to kind of focus in on like the characters. And so all the chandelier stuff, I was like, it was scary. He was right above us. I don't know. I was totally overwhelmed by it. I was a very...
Oh, you had good seats.
I lived a right? life. So it was only my like third Broadway play that I'd ever seen.
So your main concern or issue with it was that it was more spectacle than substance.
Yeah. 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 I think so.
You remember when we went to see it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were literally the back row. Like, our backs were resting on the back of the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And everything happened below us.
I've seen that show.
That must have been so underwhelming
For me, it was fascinating.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. It is. It gives you a weird kind of appreciation for a lot of what happens and how shows work.
I was, especially then, but I've always been a geek for the tech side of theater.
Mm-hmm.
And figuring out ways to do special effects and seeing how so much of it was done.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, when you have those effects where the voice is coming from all over the theater, that was all below us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why didn't they put the speaker in the back corner? I don't get that. It's the one thing I never figured out. But it was cool.
Yeah. Dan, have you ever seen it?
No.
You haven't been dragged out to it by anybody?
No, I've seen it on PBS.
Been culturemified that
for the
much.
25th anniversary when they released. When they aired it. Yeah.
But no, you've inundated me with enough videos and recordings of it.
That he's seen it in its entirety already.
Yeah, multiple versions.
I think the music, actually, once I got into the music, because I saw it without knowing anything about it, really.
If you got into the car with him for a few years there, you're a captive audience.
Okay.
You will learn the lyrics whether you like it or not.
but the music is gorgeous. And once you start listening to the lyrics and the music, I think it becomes less creepy and more sort of romantic. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Just really.
Not once in my life did I ever consider this thing a love story. It was a stalker, pure and simple.
But he loved the music. She was the only one that could make the music.
It's true.
You have you just have to accept that it's a completely different story. I've encountered
guys who said that.
I just love watching this and in awe of watching these two women trying to tell Den why he has to appreciate this. It's fascinating. Please keep going.
Man had issues. He was a stalker.
Absolutely. He definitely was a stalker.
But he was a handsome stalker.
Only in the movie. Only in the Joel Schumacher movie.
And depending... Oh, wow.
Only when King Leonidas plays.
Oh, it makes so much more sense now.
What?
Oh, I've never heard it put that way before.
The Phantom physically attractive until that movie. And I was like, oh, you probably shouldn't play the Phantom. You're too pretty. But, you know, that's a totally different discussion.
No, it never dawned on me. He's only pretty in the Joel Schumacher movie.
Right. That clicked for you now?
Oh.
Yeah, he's beautiful.
Now that's why he's pretty in the Joel Schumacher movie.
In the...
Ah!
And that's why the face mask had nipples.
Dorothy wins the night. On that note,
we need to recoup.
I think we do. Let's take a break.
Let's take a quick break.
We'll be right back. We have more Phantom, and we'll be talking sequels.
Yes.
All right.
I'm Linda Etter. You might know me from Broadway's Jekyll and Hyde or from one of my many albums. You're listening to non-productive.com.
All right, we are back. Loud Edith's radio program. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight.
Excellent way to spend an evening.
I did not know.
Having a blast.
I did not know if a Phantom show was actually going to work tonight. I still don't know if a Phantom show is working tonight.
Well, it's working. It's working for us.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't know about anybody else.
Well, that's all that matters.
We're having a good time.
That is totally all that matters. All right. So yeah, we did talk about the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. I do want to spend a couple minutes because we're starting to wind down on time. But I do want to talk about the movie a little bit and some of your reactions to it when you saw it. I had a lot of problems with this movie. Gerard Butler was way too pretty when that mask came off. Yeah. I think we've already established that. I hated whole chunks of vocals being cut from key songs like Phantom of the Opera.
I was gonna say, I only had one problem with it. And the problem was they didn't trust the music.
Knowing that it was Joel Schumacher replacing a sword fight with fireballs getting shot down kind of makes sense to me now.
It's a big spider.
in the cemetery. Otherwise, I mean, there was great moments though. I think Emmy Rossum was fairly strong considering she was 16 when she was cast. She was 18 by I think the time the movie came out.
She was just very lovely. I found the whole movie kind of fell flat. It just was very, yeah. I thought a little one note.
Yeah.
It was lovely, but kind of.
Visually beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Visually beautiful. Which is, Schumacher's got that. I mean, those Batman movies were terrible, but they were stylish as hell. They didn't work, but they were stylish as hell.
Stylish? The pink monkey costumes?
Oh, totally. I was so into that pink monkey. I couldn't even finish that statement.
Good. You tried to commit to it. You tried really hard.
He's got so much power over destroying things
I
love.
Funny.
So, let me ask you guys. So, yeah, Attica, what did you think?
All right. I have an unpopular opinion. I'm very much a flash kind of girl. I like the pretty things. That's what attracts me. I loved the new Great Gatsby, which was probably not a great movie. It was just stunning. And
yes.
I will argue
anything
until I'm blue in my face that I will just watch it. I don't care that it wasn't as good as the book. It doesn't matter. It was beautiful. So for me... I loved it because it was very pretty and it was a little more accessible, I think. And I think it was a lot more accessible to people like my mother who doesn't love opera and they didn't sing in all of the same keys, I believe, as in the play
right,
on Broadway.
Right,
Broadway loses her. She's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But like it was a little
Butler
more accessible.
I
forgive him because he's beautiful and that's a flaw I have. I forgive beautiful people for lots of things.
It was a stalker.
You shallow, shallow
woman.
I know.
You forget. We don't have to forgive Emmy Rossum for that.
No. Have you seen Shameless?
No, she can sing.
But,
I don't forgive
her. Yeah, so
I forgive her for everything.
No, we have to forgive her for Dragon Ball.
Thank God I didn't see it.
It's true, though. I did like Gerard Butler a lot more than I like the guy
that
I saw.
Well,
honestly, I think that Gerard Butler made that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I do. I think if they did not have as beautiful a Phantom as they had, the movie would have fell even flatter.
Mm. I
think that he carried that movie.
Yeah.
That's astute, I think.
If anything could make that movie, it would have been the Gerard Butler. Like, if you liked that movie, it was because of Gerard
Butler.
It
really was.
Wow.
I agree.
Huh.
I mean, and that's a female perspective,
no,
obviously.
For me personally, I thought weakest Phantom I ever saw.
Absolutely. Yeah. Vocally, the weakest Phantom, without a doubt. But also, they're up close, so like the acting nuances are a lot different than on Broadway.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an argument I had with the Les Mis movie, because I was like, I'll forgive the Les Mis movie, and all my friends are like, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Russell Crowe.
I will never forgive Russell Crowe. I'm sorry. I know we tried. It was just not good casting.
He was the best Russell Crowe he could be.
Right. Yeah. No.
I don't blame him.
I'm not saying he didn't try. I just thought that was the wrong actor for that role.
But I
agreed. But that's, again, that's not his fault.
No.
I feel like once you go see a movie, you kind of have to give over to who's there. And
right.
Russell Crowe.
He tried.
And for me,
tried like hell.
I didn't think he was the weakest part of that movie. I really hated Hugh Jackman.
I've had some people tell me that
I'm wrong. I'm sighing because
I thought he was the weakest link.
There were moments. There were times where I thought he killed it, and there were times where I thought he was horrible. And
okay, I guess I can get behind that. There were probably some true moments. I just didn't really give it to him.
Because the other thing, too, is I do give it to him because for Jean Valjean, his acting was amazing.
Right.
The power, the power in his emotion.
But
and
it's a singing role, and he was carried by everyone else in that
movie.
I don't understand why.
Amanda Seyfried?
I'm going to say something that I don't know if you'll agree with. I don't think that was Hugh Jackman's fault. I don't know why they made him sing "Bring Him Home" in that key.
I don't know. Yeah.
I've said that to everyone I could get my hands on.
Yeah,
that is the wrong
right.
key for Hugh Jackman. He's a good singer.
He's an amazing singer.
His eyeballs were going to pop out of his head. It was so uncomfortable.
There were a bunch of times actually that happened, even in the beginning.
I hate
unnecessary. He's a good singer.
Yeah.
So. I hate Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just saying that, but his Oklahoma
was fantastic.
Oh my God!
Mm-hmm. From
man
moment
can
one,
sing.
From moment one when he comes on, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to derail. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
It happens on this show. Well, you know that by now.
I know, and I'm afraid we're not going to get to the best part.
That's the beauty of it. I don't know if the live listeners will hear it, but we can go over and use it later.
All right. Cool.
All right. So Pete, Dan, any thing on the movie?
He was a stalker.
I think we've covered it.
Okay,
he was
done.
A stalker.
Done. Good enough. Moving on. So,
but you liked it better than the music.
I can't wait until we reconcile your comments about him in the original with his character in the sequel.
You saw the sequel, right?
I don't.
Still a stalker.
All right.
And
so
a kidnapper and.
So about 5 years ago,
if you want to go with that, the sequel. Never mind.
It was a long time in the works, but about 5 years ago, Andrew Lloyd Webber released Love Never Dies, which is his sequel to his version of Phantom of the Opera. I received it as a present for my birthday that year, and I got the CDs and I threw them on, expecting to be underwhelmed, but just very curious to see what this was. And I listened to the entire to this straight through. Loving what I heard and then having to go back because you don't catch all the vocals and the story in the songs initially. And that's where I believe Den was trying to go earlier by condemning me by saying, if you're in a car with this man, you'll know it, after a couple of weeks, which is true because I did play it almost every day on my rides back and forth to work for about 4 months. And I was overwhelmed. Yeah. I love it. And the hardest part was, critics did not care for this.
The sequel.
The sequel
got really reamed.
It originally opened in London's West End, and then within a couple of months opened up in Melbourne in Australia. Two totally differently directed versions of the show.
Right. That's something that... So you sent me the link to what's on YouTube, which is the Melbourne one.
There's no pirating of this here.
It's
the
on
really
there.
Useful
it's actually
company,
on there
Andrew Lloyd Webber's company, actually released this to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You sent it to me, and then I did research after watching it, and I was like, from what I gather, it's not exactly the same as what was released in London. It's completely revamped, right?
Major plot points that are changed.
The opening is completely different.
It's a completely different, almost a completely different show.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So let's clue some people into what actually happens in this. It's 10 years after the original Webber's version of Phantom. Meg and Madame Giry and the Phantom have fled Paris since the original and have spent the last few years in New York and Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
Which personally I thought was a really cool idea.
I'm all about it. I was really excited about it.
Yeah. Go to America. I mean,
go to Coney Island, the home of the freak show.
Yes. And live with the freaks.
Totally. Totally. That was a great idea.
To the point where he essentially winds up overtaking and running Coney Island.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is awesome.
Mystery.
And makes complete sense.
He's been working with Meg on this new show. And
did you just get that?
Yes.
No.
I swear to you. And actually, I was sitting here because
I saw a light bulb go off so bright.
Just right over his head.
I never understood because he uses an assumed name.
Mr. E.
Yeah.
And you really just
it's
got
Mr.
that.
Y.
It's Mr. Y.
Is it?
At least
my brain
the,
translated that.
Well, no. But if you put it together, mystery. I never got that. Like, why did he call himself Mr. Y? What does Y stand for?
To be fair, I only saw it this afternoon, but I didn't get that. I didn't pick up on that either, so I'm glad.
Apparently my brain was dyslexic and changed it completely, and I just kept hearing Mr. E, so I wasn't as clever as I thought it was.
That might have been what it was in Melbourne.
Oh, maybe.
I didn't memorize Melbourne. Because I didn't like Melbourne.
Yeah.
I don't.
I'll have to go back and listen now. You didn't like Melbourne?
This is going to be awful. I didn't like the midget.
I loved her.
Really?
You mean little person?
Huh? Oh, no.
She was amazing.
I liked her.
I kind of did too.
I was obsessed with her.
Obsessed.
Well, we got to get more into that later.
And I should clarify, it's nothing to do with her performance in there.
Okay.
It completely clashed with the way I imagined the character from listening to the London production. Because those characters are completely different.
Yeah, they're actually clockwork people.
It's ambiguous.
Oh.
It's kind of ambiguous. You get the feeling from looking at the...
No, because there's a moment where one of them is actually with the boy in the show, mm-hmm. and a hand actually shoots out of his stomach to shake his hand.
Yeah, that could be done. That could be... Yeah. It's left ambiguous as to whether they're completely automatons. They're freaks. They are the embodiment of... You have no idea what's going. The ideal Coney Island sideshow. You can't tell what this is.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And they had this wonderful Victorian steampunk elegance to them that I loved.
Neat.
And they changed that. They were a lot more carny for the Melbourne production, which is good and everything, but it's not what
you would have envisioned.
I would still kill to see the original London.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So going back to, we find out that during that time, Raoul and Christine's, romantic fairy tale ending didn't turn out to be all that much of a fairy tale.
No,
they got married.
It's very into the woods.
Yeah.
Very into the woods.
They've raised their child.
And the fan has been working with Meg on the show, but he's had an ulterior motive. He has a piece that he's been working on and finds a way to bring Christine back into his life. I'm not going to go too much further into it. I'm sure we can do the plot points and spoilers as we discuss, but I've made you guys keep quiet, and now's the time where I get to hear your opinions after I've subjected you to this. So who wants to start first?
Do you want me to go first?
He's a stalker.
That's your opinion.
So first, he's a stalker.
You're absolutely right. You're not wrong. Okay.
Still a stalker.
I went into this movie with the exact advice you gave me when you sent it to me.
I'm jealous. I got no advice whatsoever. I got a link.
Someone sent it to me, and I was like, I want to see this. And I got a million people being like, don't see it, see it, don't see it, don't see it. And then Ken calls me, and he's like, see it. I was like, okay. So I was like, all right. So I watched the thing.
But I
didn't
tell you it was good. I just
He said was watch it as like a almost a piece of fan fiction, I think was the words you used.
Your words.
Were those mine?
Yes.
Oh, I'm giving you credit for my own genius.
Yes.
Okay.
Nice.
Because I have rebuttal to that. But
okay,
go ahead.
So he said something about this. He said open mind. Open mind. That's what he said.
Keep an open mind.
So I watched it, and I watched it alone because I was like, I have to watch this, and no one was around to watch it with me. So I watched it, and I really, really liked it. I loved it, actually. However, I really did see it as a beautiful piece of fan fiction because that's not how it is in the book by the original author, obviously, which is what I'm basing it off of.
I don't think you could even get that from the musical.
Right. Exactly. It was an entirely different retelling. And I enjoyed a lot of the new aspects. And then there were a couple that really annoyed me.
Because after going back.
And really upset me because I enjoyed certain characters. Like, I was fine with Raoul being exactly what Raoul was. Sure. I was not surprised, right? I was like, good, good, get her. But
it's what happens to all Disney princes at the end of the movie.
Right. I mean, and who doesn't love, like, the love affair thing, too? Are we not supposed to give spoilers?
No, go ahead. Well, we can.
Yeah, okay. My favorite song of the entire... Well, actually, there were two of them. But two of them were my two favorite songs, which is one that the Phantom and Christine sing together the first time they're together.
Beneath the Moonless Sky?
Right.
Yes.
And it's so very sensual.
That's your
and
fan fiction, right?
That is. That's exactly what that was. And I was just like...
It was the cater.
And I'm listening to it. I'm just
waiting
like,
for him to sing to Mary Sue.
Right? I'm just like, oh wow, that's kind of a that's blatant. Okay, that happened. All right, cool. I'm all about this. And then I really, like, sound-wise, my favorite of the entire show was the song he sings to her son,
the Beauty Underneath.
It's like this beautiful rock opera, and it's like the best song. It's the standout song of the show.
Which, creepy song when you actually go back and listen to the lyrics.
Oh, it is. And visually, when you watch it, the Melbourne version was gorgeous.
I was disturbed that the Phantom was this into this boy.
But the kid is as creepy.
You gotta understand. Yeah. I had to listen to this for months upon end.
Get over it! No context.
No context.
We get it. Get over it.
He's a stalker.
Yes. But also, I assume most people figure out the plot twist before they even actually blatantly say the thing, because you're like, oh, well, obviously.
But it was, yeah.
But I loved it.
They're a little heavy-handed with it.
I disagree. I didn't think that boy was creepy at all. I was in love with him from the minute he stepped onto the screen.
Oh, I didn't dislike him, but he was creepy.
I googled him later to see what else he's done.
You did. That's almost as creepy as the Phantom hanging out with him.
Well, I'm creepy now, you know. Yeah, no. I thought for a child actor, he just was so genuine and I'm going to use the word effervescent. I mean, he just was totally gorgeous.
He embraced it. I mean, for a child being able to embrace that subject what? Matter.
Yeah. You know? I was very excited.
Don't call it subject matter. I don't know why I find that creepy. But I do.
I was totally drawn in by the freak show from the beginning, and I was starting to tell you earlier that I had seen the sideshow on Broadway, the revival, and was a little disappointed by it. I'd never seen the original, but I thought this was a better sideshow than sideshow. So I was totally drawn in. I was like, this is fantastic. This is what it's all about. It's about like the creepiest people you can get, but they're just so huge. You know, they're larger than life. And that's why I loved the midget, small person, dwarf. I don't know what they call them. But I thought she was so great. And her co-partners, one of whom looked a lot like Alan Cumming. Am I right?
A little, yeah.
A little bit.
The lanky
bit.
Guy.
Yeah. Auburn, yeah.
But anyway, I thought the three of them were just a perfect fit. I loved the whole casting. So I was a little bit like the beginning. I thought, oh, okay, I get it. 10 years. Mm-hmm, like 20 minutes of like, it's been 10 years. It's been 10 years. I was like, okay, got it.
It's been a while. Thank you.
It's been a while. Go ahead.
Did you guys get to see the 25th anniversary thing that they released?
I don't think I did see it.
It was a performance that was done in London for the anniversary. It was beamed into movie theaters through Fathom Events, so you could watch it in the theater. They released it on video. It was a really cool thing. They brought up until like that current roster, their dream cast of Ramin Karimloo and Sierra Boggess, who up until that point was also known for being Ariel in the original production of Little Mermaid. And the cool thing was, after they were finished with their run on Phantom, they went directly into Love Never Dies.
Really?
In London.
That's awesome.
Oh.
And I think that's what makes that version probably a lot more cooler, because people that were already fans can go back and see this new thing with them, with the same voices, and, you know. And it was a lot of the actors that were all part of that production and left to go do this.
Wow.
Is he the one whose voice is on the soundtrack for the London one?
Yes.
I didn't love him as Phantom.
Oh, I do love him.
I fell in love with the voice of the man who played Phantom in Melbourne.
Really?
I really did. And I googled him afterwards. He did nothing afterwards. That was it. I was like, oh,
did
really?
Did you watch the movie first?
Yes,
maybe
I did.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe
because you hear the one thing first and then you're like, I like this or like that. His voice was just more beautiful, I felt. Mm. The other one was more raw. I absolutely would give him that. But I fell in love with his voice and was just like, this guy, what else has he done in the Undercover Fire thing?
Yeah, no, really. So I was a little bit, I was like, in the beginning, I think they didn't have me hooked. And then the Christine sings to her son, I wrote these lyrics down. Love is a curious thing. It often comes disguised. Look at love the wrong way. It goes unrecognized. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, okay, this movie means something. And then I just, towards the end, I got hooked in it in the second act. It kind of hooked me back in. And I thought it was excellent. It was really good.
You know, actually, go ahead. You got something? No. Go ahead.
Even though
stalker.
Yeah, okay, I was going to wait for that.
The opening of the second act, actually, for me too, I thought was very strong, with Raoul getting drunk in the bar.
Oh my god, I love that song.
Oh yeah.
Why does she love me? Yeah, it's
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No,
I skipped ahead. I'm sorry. You're right. I was. I think we're on
both
the same
doing
one.
Devil Take the Hindmost.
I was going there. I was going there.
Yes.
Because that.
And then I have a comment on that when you're done.
That set the tone exactly for how much of a jerk Raoul is. Because, you know, all the horrible things. He's like, this woman does not, you know, I don't deserve her. She's too good for me. And, you know, it was a great character thing for him because he doesn't really have a lot to do except for kind of yell at Madame Giry and get upset with the Phantom for dragging him out there. And that's that one moment where he gets to shine. And then it's followed up by Meg coming in, foreshadowing going for a swim in the ocean.
Yeah. Yep.
And how desolate it is here. Kind of telling him, as long as you stay here, you're pretty much dead. I mean, you'll be empty forever. Mm-hmm. To the swap of the bartender.
So good.
Doing one of the most creepy things by the two of them bargaining over the fate of Christine.
I was listening to the song and it got stuck in my head and I loved it and it's got this great vibe to it. But the feminist in me was like, okay, I'm sorry, what? Take three steps back. You guys are, you literally just bet your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You bet your wife
yeah.
with the Phantom. You're an idiot. And who the hell are you to say she belongs to you? Like, I got all twisted out of shape about it. But then I was like, it's a play. I understand.
Right. Love it.
You
know, loved
check
it.
Your feminism for a hot second.
No, I agree.
But I was annoyed on Christine's behalf. And I was like, oh, screw both of them. Take the kid and go.
Damn
straight. I loved it initially. And then later on down the road, when I thought of it, I'm like, wait a minute. These guys are both
That's exactly
assholes.
What happened to me. I watched it a bunch of times. And I was just like, but the song is so good. I was like singing the song, and I'm like, oh.
I'm sorry. To be perfectly blunt, I was waiting for the two of them to whip it out and just,
right?
You know,
well,
just,
at that point,
start a sword fight.
I thought he was leading Raoul somewhere. Like he was trying to play devil's advocate.
Right.
And that isn't what
happened. No.
He's
so like,
just a jerk.
He's like, I'm better than you, and I'm going to prove it.
Yeah.
I was hoping he was just trying to expose Raoul. But like,
same here.
And I honestly think that's what,
maybe that was the point.
I think that's what they were going for, but they didn't do it. They didn't.
Right.
There was never any follow through that made you say, oh, wait, the Phantom was the good guy all along.
Right.
Like, he never was really he was never really wagering anything there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he wasn't treating Christine like a piece of meat, but that reveal never came.
Right, right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was bad.
Can I also bring up the twist at the end of who the actual antagonist turns out to be by the time it's all said and done?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. You voice your opinion first, and then I'm
going to... Spoiler alert.
I was really, really hurt and upset.
Yeah.
Like, I felt betrayed by this by the time it was over.
A little bit.
We find that it's hard because I understand the justification of it, too. What happens is Meg, who has been the Phantom supporter and advocate since?
She's pretty much been his breadwinner. Let's put that out there. She's been she fell very far from doing things in the Paris Opera House. She pretty much started doing burlesque, which is a far cry from being in the Paris Opera
House.
Which
is funny because that's the thing, one of the things that she's most proud of. Which,
right, was her burlesque number, which was really cute. I watched it and I was like, this is so good. I want to do an homage to this.
So good.
I was so excited about it. I wanted to bring up the burlesque thing, but, you know, that's a good segue. And, you know, so she goes and does all these things and then, you know, she sings her song and she pretty much says that she's been sleeping. She's been prostituting herself.
Yeah.
So he can have this money to do this thing, and whether he knew or not, right?
So he could be in the stature.
And
of power
she's pretty much in love with him,
yeah.
Or has this hero worship. They don't quite define it. I don't think. Yeah. I kind of got that she was in love with him, and she wanted his approval and wanted the thing.
She's in the process of what's been a very slow mental breakdown because of everything, the way he's been using her.
I don't actually think that it's him, though.
I
put all the blame on her mother.
Yeah.
On the mother, yeah.
The mother knew exactly enforcing what was going down. Her mother was the one pushing for all the things and whispering the things in her ear.
How many times was she whispering, don't worry, he's got something great planned for you.
Yep.
You know
it's
what,
be
though?
Fantastic.
I can't forgive him for it.
Oh, absolutely not. And then he realizes that he misstepped and tries to fix the thing. And then
she's too far gone at that point. Yeah.
But then he says the worst thing you could possibly say to somebody. I was like, oh my God, you are the most clever man. You figured out the way to manipulate everyone around you. And then you're just like, but not everyone can be Christine. Are you kidding me?
Listening to that for the first time, I had it in my car.
That was the jaw dropper.
And I sat there and I screamed. No! Why would you say that?
You're the smartest man in the room and you have to say, you had to say that.
Well, it's funny you say that you brought that up about her getting money for him, because when the movie opened, I was like, this guy was getting begging for money from the theater managers in the original, Broadway production. Mm-hmm. I was like, how does he now own Coney Island? How did that happen? Yeah. What happened these last 10 years? So that was very telling. And I really thought Meg was the most interesting character.
Me too. Oh, she was my favorite.
She was my favorite. Not only because the actress was great, but that twist at the end really, it blew my mind.
But you think back, going back to the first production, I mean, Meg was Christine's cheerleader.
Yeah. And she was her best friend. Had this beautiful moment where they reconnected in the movie, in the show. And they were very excited. And Meg is so excited that Christine can see her as this leading lady and they're going to be equals. Yeah. And then she drops the bomb on her that she's going to be singing too. Yeah. Oh, it's just a song, but poor Meg is
it's the whole show.
I thought it was me. And now it's you again. It's hard not to resent that friend that keeps doing the doing that.
I always loved the character of Meg, from the first one.
Which is why I kind of felt like I was betrayed.
We were all betrayed. We were all a little betrayed.
And not by her, by the writers.
The writers.
Frankly, I was just so happy that she got such a big part. Yeah. Oh, she's so important to the story. I didn't think anybody else noticed her in the first one.
Yeah, exactly.
my heart broke for her, I thought it was, I loved it.
Let's say, because you understand the justification of why she's doing what she's doing, but it's just like, you don't want that to happen to
But you don't
cute
understand,
Meg
I think, the mother's justification.
Right. I couldn't figure out the mother's justification either at all.
Or her character. At least Meg, they fleshed her out. They really gave her, this whole thing.
I think Madame Giry was just under the impression that after he was built up, and now that they're kind of building this whole thing, that she was going to be taken care of, and they were going to get out of where they were, and she was going to have at least a little something of her own
to show for her.
Yeah. I think going back to when she found him under the opera, I think Madame Giry always had a thing for the Phantom.
Okay. I believed that too, but I really felt in the sequel that she was pushing her daughter towards him, and not in
I think it was a vicarious thing. She had accepted that it was never going to happen. He and her were never going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I could see that.
Sure.
But now she's partly pushing her daughter.
Right.
She also is angry and thinks the Phantom owes her.
She was the original Hollywood mom.
Yeah.
I mean, think
yeah.
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 It's a little more complex.
Honey Boo Boo's mom.
Or dance moms, for those of them.
Now we're getting into real horror.
I really think you need a part three.
Do you really, though?
About Madame Giry.
No.
I think she needs to be the...
Go back, if you haven't, now, because the play, the musical had been, the sequel had been in the works for at least 10 years back now. It came out 5 years ago.
Okay.
But within that whole 10-year period, or if not more, I forget how long it's been now, going back and watching the Schumacher movie, do you guys remember how it ends?
No.
He's supposed to die. She thinks he's dead.
After that, there's an epilogue where
there's
Raoul,
an apology, right?
Yeah. There's an epilogue with Madame Giry. And Raoul in a wheelchair visiting Christine's...
Right, which is why I always knew at the end of the movie, there, Christine, I'm spoiling stuff?
No, go ahead.
No, that's okay.
All right, yeah. Because
it's tied together,
gonna die.
Going back
and
to it, yeah.
So I knew going in, I was like, well, they visited her grave, but she was buried in Paris, and then she dies in Coney Island, so I guess they're going to bring her body back.
Well, they
but Raoul left
but
her.
But they traveled.
Raoul left her. He just like up and left. He's like, forget this. Here, you deserve better. Clause. Here, stay with your stalker. Yeah.
That was the Earth 2.
Although I can't really be that mad at him if he figured out that it was the Phantom's kid. I mean, that's a thing.
Yeah, that took a little bit for him to go, huh?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He's like, no, you're lying. I'm like,
Well, so you're the last guy in the room.
Talented, musical, fairly intelligent.
No. Yeah.
Probably smarter than Dad.
Right. A little bit.
What's your point?
Yep.
But, all right.
But he has my...
hair color?
Money.
All right, so we are running over. We got to hear your sides. So how would you rate it? How you know, give us a grade.
Oh, I liked it. I actually think I liked it better than the Joel Schumacher version of Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would say that's
so was that 4.5 stars? I can't give it 5. You know why? Because they betrayed me with the Meg thing.
Better than Joel Schumacher really only translates to 1 or higher stars.
Oh, okay. All right.
So,
All right. I'm gonna give it 4.5. I can't give it 5 because
it still hurts.
It does. It still hurts. It's a salt in the open wound.
I'm going to give it 4. I think I need to spend a little more time with the music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with 4. I felt very good.
It's easily accessible now, though, so
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Dan.
You're quite familiar with the score.
Well, excellent
Stalker.
Singing.
All right.
No, actually, excellent singing and many points, excellent performances with what they had at hand. I'll give it to the cast on that. Not enough swords and gunplay, but hey.
It's because Schumacher didn't do it.
I'll give it a 4 stars because I think the ending could have been arranged slightly differently and would have been much better.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone on record of how much I love this show, so I'm not even going to keep continuing. I'm just glad that, you know, we apparently are all in the minority where rabid Phantom fans are concerned.
I made my best friend watch it and another friend of mine when I went to visit them, and they really liked it too. So everyone I've made watch it really liked it.
At some point, maybe in another 10 years.
But it's also the Melbourne version.
I was going to say, I don't know that I loved this. I don't know that I loved the script or I loved that production so much. So that's why I'm a little, I have to see it again.
Historically speaking, the Melbourne production came out after the critical writing was on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so changes were made by the time it actually hit over there.
Oh, interesting.
And it had basically all, but it yes, the changes were made, but the writing was already on the wall for mm-hmm. London, mm-hmm. and there was no way London was ever going to stage that play again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least not immediately. So maybe another 20 years.
All right.
Sad face.
That said, I want to thank everybody for helping us out today with which is a very weird topic to bring up. And thank you guys for sitting through it and not running away. Thank you guys for coming back.
It was really exciting for Phantom.
I guess we really do have friends where this show's concerned for people to come back again and help us out with this. Dorothy, what do you have going on? I know you have some shows coming up.
I do. I have a couple of... I'm in an original musical coming up in November in Central Jersey, not so much in this area. And then I'm part of a cabaret group that performs around, again, Central Jersey and Freehold coming up in November. So those are a couple things I'm working on now, and I don't know, more to come.
Cool. Atticus?
I am also all over doing burlesque and stuff. Like, when is this going live?
The last
about 20 hour. Minutes.
Okay, yeah. So I have a show in Newark the next 2 Thursdays. Not the Thursday that's coming up, but the next 2 Thursdays. I'm performing with Ula Uber Busen. Remember we talked about her?
Actually, she'll be guesting on the show next month.
Oh, good. Finally. She told me to tell you that she wants to be here. So
we've been talking a lot. Schedule conflicts are always hard.
Yeah, but we're performing together in Newark at Hell's Kitchen next Thursday. And then,
oh, wow.
The Thursday after that is their Halloween show, which I do every year. And then on Halloween, I will be with Brunswick Basement. And we're going to be at the Core Tavern.
How we first met you.
Exactly. Yeah. You should come out to another show.
Yes. Yes. I will. I promise.
We'll see. It's been like, what, a year and a half now?
Something like that.
2 years?
Horrible.
Again, schedules.
I'm judging you.
So, all right, guys, thank you so much for helping us out tonight.
Thank you for having us.
That is going to do it for us. We are Loud Idiots. I am Longshot Ken.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Big Papa Pete. Loud Idiots, out!
When love begins, who knows what makes it start? One day, it's simply there, alive inside your heart.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.